Hello and welcome to International Media with me, Amanda Morrow. This week's show looks at how our posts on social media offer a potential goldmine of information on the state of our health. Plus, YouTube taps its vast commercial potential with the internet giant unveiling a paid version of its video sharing service. It appears your Facebook addiction could be just what the doctor ordered. Social media profiles can, in essence, be seen as a snapshot of our daily lives, and in the same way that advertisers exploit the information we post to market a product, health researchers in the United States say that that same information can be exploited for medical purposes. A study at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania was the first to examine this intersection of social media and health, and its lead author, Dr. Raina Merchant, says our digital footprints are more telling than we realize.
We are building a data bank of language, and we feel that just like there are these banks of genomic data that can reveal a lot about diseases over time and allow for targeted interventions, we believe that there is potentially a lot of similar information in social media. And so the data in social media really provides sort of a diary of our daily lives that's as potentially rich as the information in our genome. And so the data in forms of like the posts that we put on social media, the photos, the things we like, our internet searches, these sort of digital footprints have the potential to reveal a lot about health. So what we did is we asked patients if they would be willing to share information from their social media data and also allow us to look at their health record information to see if there were connections between the two. We didn't look at any data in real time. We didn't look at individual sort of posts of patients. We really looked in aggregate for patterns that could emerge.
The cybersphere is ripe with chatter on all things medical, everything from diet and exercise behaviors and prescribed medications to something as mundane as a headache. For the Penn study, more than 1,000 participants agreed to share their data, which amounted to some 1.4 million posts and tweets dating back to 2009. So how exactly is this treasure trove of information used? Merchant says that the most important factor is quantity.
This was a preliminary study to first see, was it possible to actually get the data? And then could we find that there was enough data? And so one of the challenges would be if we had patients who shared a lot of data, but maybe they only have 10 posts in social media, we really needed a large volume of data with which to analyze. And so we were able to collect over 1 million posts with over 12 million words. And so using machine learning practices and natural language processing, we're able to then take these 12 million words and look for associations between the words that people use and the diseases that they have. This really was sort of the preliminary sort of step at being able to build this database to look for these connections in language and health.
So there's computer algorithms that go through and analyze the data.
Exactly. So we work very closely. This is a nice partnership with sort of physicians and computer scientists to look at really big data and see if we can develop these algorithms and identify patterns in the data that would allow us to see potential connections with health. Again, we didn't read every post. We didn't look at people's Facebook and read each post of a patient, but rather we looked across multiple patients' posts over time to see if we can find connections that might emerge across lots of people that would have a potential disease.
So the greater the data, the greater the potential. While it all stems from the online behaviours of an individual, the research more globally can tell us about a population. It has the potential to identify general health trends that could lead to the creation of education campaigns and interventions, for example. A big picture approach that will enable a targeted outcome.
It's about the entire sort of digital footprint that we leave. And some of that is in the form of the things that we write. Some of it is the images that we take. Some of it is the places where we check in and we're saying that we're at a particular location. And I think that that complete picture of all these things that we leave throughout the day are actually often related to our health. And if we look at them sort of in aggregate and over time, we can potentially glean some interesting insights. We're really interested in looking at sort of big picture, can we understand things about a population of patients that have a particular condition? The longer range plan really is to say, how do we make these associations that we uncover really legible for patients? And so how do we tell patients, you know, based on the types of things that you post, you're more likely to post like someone who has a particular condition. And so really the idea is that we look sort of big picture more globally first at across lots of different diseases to be able to come up with targeted data that we could give to a patient that would say your digital footprint suggests something about you. So how do we empower people in the future with this data? We know that marketers do this all the time. When you purchase something online, then you see an ad that pops up for something that might not be the exact thing, but something really similar. How do we then sort of come up with similar approaches to then give patients information back that could actually help them change their health behaviors?
There are big plans for Merchant's social media data bank, with her team hoping to enroll thousands more patients over the next decade. Well, our Facebook posts aside, most of us have had reason in our online lives to click on a YouTube video, and most of us in the process have probably been irritated by the in-stream ads that we're forced to watch before we can access our video. YouTube, which is owned by Google, will be counting on our desire to put paid to those ads as it looks to persuade us to fork out money for a service that we already get for free. Yes, YouTube has announced a new paid subscription service that would eliminate advertisements. This, as it looks to better tap its vast commercial potential and fend off competition from other premium content sites. At this week's unveiling of YouTube Red in Los Angeles, YouTube's chief business officer, Robert Kinsel, said the service would also include an expanded music platform along with exclusive shows and movies.
Consumers are embracing paid subscriptions for ad-free content at an incredible pace. The entire YouTube team and all of our partners, we have been working on bringing a whole new experience to fans and an experience they've been asking for, a new way to experience YouTube without ads. YouTube Red marks an evolution in our desire to give fans more choice and features that they love and have a much greater experience they've been asking for. YouTube Red gives you all of YouTube gaming, all of YouTube music on any device, wherever you log in, and exclusive access to new original shows and movies, and access to Google Play Music. All for what you would pay for either one music service or one entertainment service.
YouTube Red will be launched in the United States on Wednesday, costing just under $10 a month before it's rolled out globally. Exclusive shows and movies from top YouTube personalities, including Joey Graceffa, PewDiePie, Lily Singh, and the Fine Brothers, will be the driving force behind the content. Graceffa, whose two YouTube channels have a combined total of more than 600 million views, spoke at the LA event.
I'm just so happy that I get to do this with YouTube because I've been doing YouTube for over 8 years now, and the fact that I get to do a show that I'm so passionate about and go crazy with on a platform that I've been on for so long is just super exciting and awesome. So, thank you, YouTube.
Well, back in the day, YouTube was created by three young entrepreneurs as a way to swap videos before it was bought by Google for $1.6 billion back in 2006. It's now the world's most third visited website after Google and, of course, Facebook. YouTube says that it will continue to offer its free ad-supported service, which has more than a billion viewers around the world. And that brings us to the end of this week's International Media with me, Amanda Morrow.